Capital 101.7 FM and Capital Digital. The time is 6 o'clock.
Capital Radio presents The Listening Post, a program of information and entertainment, especially for those with Defence Force Associations, past and present, first responders, their families and their friends. And welcome to The Listening Post. I'm your host, Tony Hallers. Alan Downes is our research officer and Nigel Rogers, the resident military historian. My studio colleague is Susan, and our telephone number, whoa, a list of things today, 93649888. Well, this is the second week of our new look. More concise programmes with more discussion and personal chats, and all to be heard over 1 hour rather than two. Well, tonight our discussion features former Army soldier Megan Davidson, who has dedicated her civilian life to aiding veterans and first responders as they tackle life's problems. And Jenny Davis, OAM, well known to the Listening Post as a valued chronicler of veterans' stories. Well, Megan and Jenny have just combined in a project for the organisation Buddy Up, which Megan founded here in Western Australia, but it has now spread nationally. Megan and Jenny join us after Soldiers on Parade from the Listening Post bandstand.
Thank you.
welcome to meeting your guests on the Listening Post this evening. Two ladies that I've known for a very long time. One I've only just recently met, but feel I know her very well after that very short time. Jenny Davis OAM, as you know, as our resident author of everything. Jenny, welcome to Listening Post.
Thank you very much, Tony.
And Megan Davidson, welcome indeed to the Listening Post.
Thank you.
And all the work you're doing with what we're going to talk about ultimately is Buddy Up with both Jenny and you. But first, I want to ask you, Megan, your military career is an interesting one. I heard a statement of you saying something about, I don't want to kill people. Could you explain that without getting us all in strife?
Sure. When I joined the army, my grandfather had served. In fact, I found out later that both my grandfathers had served. But my grandfather was a Grand Engineer in the Royal Australian Air Force in World War II. And he was the president of Riverton RSL. In fact, he started RSL in Riverton. And so he was obviously inspiration. And both my brother and I wanted to join the services. And I probably wanted to leave Perth and explore the world and all those things, but wanted to do my service to the country, and went through Duntroon. After 18 months, we were trained by Vietnam veterans, so you very much feel like, okay, I want to go to war, I want to go. But over time, because I went to the Royal Australian Corps of Electrical Mechanical Engineers, or RAMEE, and so every day we're not fighting we're not fighting wars, we are fixing. So over time, your mindset shifts, and yes. Over time I said, I don't want to kill anyone, don't want to be killed, perhaps it's not the right career for me. So after 11 years, it got to that point that I said, something else is out there.
Yeah. Right. When you mentioned Duntroon, though, were you surrounded by men and women who had that same sort of ultimate thought, what's the clientele that you experienced?
Sure. No, everyone there is there to serve their country, and I think there is a very masculine energy, I would say. So to give you a picture, my class at Duntroon was quite a large one. I think it was about 150, 160,
that's
something
a lot
like
of people.
That. And quite a large proportion of them were ex-serving soldiers that had come, which was great, a good balance for us. Of that, there was 28 women who started and 14 that graduated. So a 50% attrition rate. And it was tough. It was tough to be.
This may sound nasty, but why do you think there's such a large dropout in those days of the female population?
Yeah, I think physically it's tough. So if you ask a female about Duntroon, I think most of them say it's more physical challenging rather than intellectually.
Right.
Yeah, so it takes a toll. There wasn't that much difference of what we had to do. So, we were only about the 10th class to go through. I think it had been open for about 4 or 5 years, Duntroon. And I said before that had been, it didn't exist. Women didn't go to Duntroon. Mm-hmm. And so, it was still trying to find its way of, what we needed to do. So there was a lot of negativity. And it's interesting that when we had our first reunion, which was about 10 years later, I had a lot of the guys come up to me and some of the other, and just apologise. And I said, what are you apologising for? And they said, we treated you so badly. And it's because they become husbands and fathers and they realise what they'd done, And I thought, oh, that's so nice to hear. I didn't expect that apology. But, geez, it's nice. It's really nice. Thank you. Yeah.
Do you, with your, whatever your contact is with the current situation at Duntroon and the like establishments, has it improved greatly for women?
I believe so. And even the training itself, I saw a post actually this morning on LinkedIn, just seeing the training difference, because I think they're preparing people better for leaders. So I noticed that they've got an exercise that they do at Cooma in the community where they're actually engaging with emergency services, and so it's more like an insurgency, which is much more realistic to what the wars are now, as opposed to back in the day of the as I was saying before, like that the enemy's on one side and we're on the other, and you know, the logistics are way back, you know, not anymore. The logistics are in amongst it, just like the...
Do you think the training that you underwent with your with the Vietnam veterans and so on, did that take that into some consideration?
Oh, yeah. Look, they were hardcore, you know. So we even had our commandant of Duntroon at the time when I first got there was Major General Blake, and he'd been in Vietnam and been caught out without his entrenching tool, so he wasn't able to dig in when the enemy under an enemy attack. And so when we were at Duntroon, he made it compulsory for us on our webbing to have our entrenching tool. Now, that's something that would normally go on your pack, and you know, it's quite heavy. So what that meant is, for 6 months while he was commandant for us, we would run around and this thing would just bang on your leg, and you know, it was so heavy and clunky. And but that was because he had lived experience of what that meant, you know, and that could have saved, you know, people's lives. And so, but the new commandant came in and just said, oh, no, it's, you know, let's just get rid of that. It's not practical. So it's just,
it's amazing.
You know, with lived experience, just shift your mindset about, well, you know.
And it comes back to the very stark thing that whoever is leading at the time is responsible not only for themselves and the way they think, but the way everybody else does.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to, before we have some music, I just want to ask Jenny, because Jenny's worked with soldiers, sailors, airmen and women for an awfully long time. I recall shows at the Military Museum in Fremantle where actors have portrayed various soldiers and so on. Have you... Jenny, have you seen a difference in the stories that come to you down these years? I mean, when was the first thing you did, for example?
Probably in around about the... celebrating the end of World War II. Well, commemorating the end of World War II. The 50th anniversary of the end.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't born. I was only born just after the World War II.
Okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah. So it was the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II in 1995. I suppose that's when I really started working with war stories, because it was... But although I had already been talking to seniors a lot, doing oral histories, and so inevitably the war was a large part of the stories they told. And in fact, my own parents in Britain were in the RAF during the war, and my grandfather, one of my grandfathers, was a captain in the Royal Engineers in World War I in France and wounded. And my other grandfather was in the Boer War. So I guess there's plenty of military history in my family, and, you know,
and also your novel of Dear Heart.
Dear Heart, yes. Well, that's
where you
based
found
on,
those letters to-ing and fro-ing from a serving army person and a girlfriend.
Well, it was my aunt and... my uncle actually was in the RAF, and the letters that he was actually a prisoner.
So that must have given you a whole insight as well.
Yes, it did. But to answer your question, which I've gone way off the track with, I suppose the experience with Buddy Up was a real revelation to me, because most of the stories I'm dealing with are at a distance in time, so they've become almost historical even for those telling the story.
Heritage stories.
Yes. And mostly they're of a period when, particular social mores were entrenched anyway. So, yes, talking to modern military...
Is
different, and interesting to see how even talking to them over the sort of probably about 20 years difference with some of the people giving their stories, you can see the difference in attitudes.
That's what I want to explore when we come back after the music from both of you. And if you care to argue with one another, please feel free. But in the meantime, let's have some music.
Wasted and wounded, ain't what the moon did. I got what I paid for now. See you tomorrow. Hey, Frank, can I borrow a couple of bucks from you to go waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll go waltzing Matilda with me.
I'm an innocent victim of a blinded alley. I'm tired of all these soldiers here. Yeah, no one speaks English, and everything's broken, and my strength is soaking away. To go waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll go a waltzing Matilda with me.
You can ask any sailor, and the keys from the jailer, and the old men in wheelchairs know that Matilda's the defendant. Yeah, she killed about 100. She follows wherever you may go. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll go a waltzing Matilda with me.
And it's a battered old suitcase to a motel someplace, and a wound that will never heal. No prima donnas, and the perfume is on this old shirt, and it's stained with blood and whiskey.
It's good night to the street sweepers,
the night watchman flame keepers, and good night Matilda, too.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda.
Oh, come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And he sang as he watched, and waited till his billy boiled.
You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda with me.
You're still with the Listening Post on Capital Radio 101.7 FM and Capital Digital here in Perth, Western Australia. Perhaps you're listening to this program on your trusty computer somewhere else in this wide and wonderful world. So if you are, welcome. Now, Megan, I'll start with you if I might again. Buddy Up Australia is a brochure I have in front of me, and I'm cheating a little bit because I was at a function that you and Theatre 180 held quite recently. But what the hell is Buddy Up?
Okay, so it is an organisation that supports serving and ex-serving military and emergency services personnel and their immediate families. And the idea is that we're preventing suicide, that's the ultimate, but obviously we're really in that phase of early intervention and prevention of mental illness. Because there are a lot of organisations out there that recognise people when they're in that trauma state, and there's that support, but not so much in that early intervention state. And the other thing, we're different in that we actually say we respect that you've served, but we don't care. We don't care if it's one day. We don't care if you went to war or didn't go to war. We don't want to know what rank you were. Just come along. And so we're different to some of, you know, the more regimented, you know. So I'm a member of an RSL at North Beach, a brilliant RSL, you know, very large membership base, do a lot of activities. But they are and importantly so, they're about commemoration, and they want to keep that, you know, that yes. military discussion going, and, you know, that's important. Mm. And so we wanted to be able to separate from that, but also invite our emergency services personnel, because, you know, they are living a battlefield every day.
Can we backpedal just a bit? And how did you get yourself involved? I mean, you founded it, and now it's right across Australia, but how did that all happen?
So I'd been out for many years, but I saw a lot of my mates not travel so well, you know, with PTSD and things. I was fortunate that I got out of my services without an injury and without PTSD. But I've seen others not so lucky. And I was looking around and thought, although there is, you know, legacy's more for families, RSL's more that commemoration, and there just really wasn't something that just acknowledged that people just needed to get active and do that sort of thing, rather than, because unfortunately with a lot of the services there's a real drinking culture, and I know I was in that culture for a while, but it's unhealthy, and so we needed to find something to say, hey, you can get that dopamine hit some other way, you know, let's get out and about. Whether that's
so was there a personal issue for you? I don't mean you in the booze or anything, but a personal issue that attracted you to do this work.
So I guess throughout during my career, one of my postings was actually Toowoomba Defence Family Centre, and we had a psych and social worker, and I had a guy present, and he would have only been in his mid-50s. He was a chopper pilot, and he presented to me saying that he'd had nightmares and things like that, and And he basically, what was happening is his granddaughter was triggering him for these nightmares because he'd basically gone into Vietnam and shot up villages and realised he'd probably killed children.
Oh, yes.
And it was the first realisation for me about this PTSD, like, what is it? And, this is 30 years after a war, and I was thinking, what's going on?
Whereas previously we might have said, oh, get over it.
Yes, yeah. Mm. And so I just thought, and so that was probably the first. And then over time I just kept hearing these people, and then, you know, you start to lose friends through suicide and you think, this is not good enough. Mm. And so I guess there'd been a culmination, and I thought, we need something better. So I looked externally, because I didn't feel that there was something in Australia that was the right model, and I looked externally to the UK, to New Zealand, to America. And in America, there's two organisations over there that were really, really resonated. One was called Team Rubicon, and one was called Team Red, White and Blue. Team Rubicon is what we now know as Disaster Relief Australia here in Australia.
Yes.
Fantastic organisation. So what they do is deploy troops to a disaster zone. And so you basically put on your super suit again and you go and you know, defend. But I guess my concern about that was that you're still tapping into that need to be the superhero and have to have that competence. And so there's obviously a contingent out there that go, I don't know if I can do that anymore. I'm over that, or I don't feel I've got the skills or whatever. Or they just want to actually get away from it all. And so Team Red, White and Blue are all about regular activities. You know, you've got a place no matter what you turn up to that day. You know, so it might be that you're capable and you can do the triathlon or whatever it is, but if not, you can do the photography or the water boy or whatever that, you know.
Or the tiddlywinks.
Yeah, tiddlywinks, yeah. Whatever. You know, so there's something for everyone, and we wanted to be able to, you know, I guess provide this safe space. We have activities without alcohol predominantly, you know, so we really try to reduce that culture, that need to have it. But we don't say you can't, but we just say, look, this is who we are.
There's a better way.
Yeah. Mm. And so we have a lot of activities in the morning as a result, because it is harder to have activities at night in Australia without sort of some sort of alcohol. But so we work with RSLs, we work with Legacy, we collaborate with as many organisations as possible.
Now, when you say we, that includes people like Jenny Davis.
Year to 180, yes. Yeah.
So how did that association come about?
So, in fact, it was I was invited to one of their productions, The Fortunate Life, a few years ago, and I bought my mum a ticket. She loves the theatre. And on the day I said, Mum, I think I'm taking you to the theatre, but I'm not sure because it's at Warwick Cinema. So I really have have no idea what I'm taking you to. Anyway, I was blown away by Theatre One Eight's production. Yeah, and I just and from that, I was then on their mailing list, and then there was a couple of times that Rebecca Davis and I would communicate, and then their one of their board members, Suzanne, was a friend of one of my very good friends, Tony Mitchell, and so we connected.
Again,
yeah.
If you live in Perth,
you know everyone, don't you?
Yes,
so
indeed.
There's some sort of connection.
So, Jenny, what was your reaction to? I mean, you've been busy writing plays, and we've had the Sydney sinking and all that sort of thing. So what was your reaction when somebody turns up with this obviously strong personality that Megan has, and you couldn't say no to whatever she wanted, probably?
And we certainly wouldn't want to, because this the project with Megan and Buddy Alp, and we had done one last year with Legacy, actually, it very much ties into the core activities of the company, even before we morphed into, because we used to be called AgeLink Theatre.
And even before that, you were AgeLink Reminiscence?
We were. Yeah. Unfortunately, so many people said they couldn't spell reminiscence, so I had to drop it.
That's terrible. True, good point.
It's true, totally true. Because I really liked art, A-R-T.
Yes, but, you know, very clever.
So we had at instead, yeah. AgeLink Theatre. But that was fine. So that core kind of community involvement work is still really important to us. And although, you know, we are very involved in these wonderful productions that we so adore, doing bringing theatre, live theatre into cinemas and live theatre into theatres as well, and we are a main stage company, we also still want to be deeply involved with the community, because that's where the stories come from, the audience come from. That is our base, really. And we think that theatre has a place everywhere.
But Jenny, a devil's advocate type of question. That's all very well, but there are community areas which take a great deal of publicity with them, and I think of, quite rightly so, things like cancer research and all that sort of thing. But this is sort of dealing with an individual with particular problems that may be large or maybe small. What took you to Buddy Up?
Yes, I'm just puzzling about that one.
Good.
Figuring that one out. Well, I don't know about this, the business about people. We're all dealing with, in the end, we're dealing with individuals, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, big organisations may have their own ways of doing things. I mean, we've tapped into big organisations at times. We did have done an awful lot over the years with people with dementia, for instance, and that doesn't get huge song and dance made about it either, but that's not the point. Mm-hmm. We are doing, in the way we do it, Buddy Up, we're doing a kind of playback theatre situation with people who've given us their stories and with their families, in order to improve their lives. I mean, to give them hope and...
Okay. Now, well, that leads me directly, and either can answer this. When you came to the situation of theatricalizing Buddy Up stories, how involved did you become in the problem, inverted commas, and the people? And what did you do, Megan? Were you ever asked to act as a censor for anything that you both were working on?
So we were given the opportunity, all the people that spoke and contributed were given the opportunity to look back at the script and say, that's not exactly, you know, what I said, or can you just change that? It was wonderful. And so a couple of things I want to say is that Theatre 180 have an incredible ability to provide a safe space for our people to speak. It was, because there were some hard stories and there were some people who really needed to...
This is in reference to
this
the
recent,
event
yes.
that I went to, yes.
Yeah, so there were five sessions precursoring that event you went to, where it was a two-hour session, people could log on from... So we had people in Brisbane, Victoria and Adelaide, and then we had the ones in person here at Como. And, you know, some of them had some very intense things to say. And yet the team at Theatre 180 listened and acknowledged and validated and honoured those stories. and were then able to, so that even just that second week, they had a mini script ready. So yes. we got prepared for hearing our own story, because I think it was the third or fourth session that was quite intense, and music, and you know, and one of the gentlemen actually had to walk out. He just, that hearing his story back, even though it was just a small component of the bigger story, he found that really challenging. And he loved it, but he hated it. And that, you know, it was...
So the challenge was the right source.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If it gives to... Well, I was also going to say a wash clean in many ways.
Jenny, well, so I was just going to say... Yeah. Sorry, interrupting, but I was just going to say that after that... I think the third whatever session when we'd done a lot more in the script and we had music and it was getting to that sort of stage of being more affecting, what the wonderful thing that happened was that we got so much more material, so much deeper, and people, it opened up for people after that, you know. They said, well, I suppose they, as you say, they could see that it was going to be moving for everyone, but it was still cathartic in many ways. So people gave us a lot more, a lot more depth. And I wanted to circulate the script really early so that people could say, oh, yes, but there's more to this. You know, we've alluded to that briefly, but there's a lot more we can say. And that's exactly what happens. So, yeah. And also, you do that because you know it's impossible for anybody outside the situation, outside the group of Theatre 180 people, to understand what the end result will be. I mean, over the years, I've written so many scripts on people's stories, and always they say, well, how are you going to do this? And I always say, well, I don't really know until I start, quite honestly, because every situation is different, every format will be different. But it's a work in progress, and you have to be involved as the person giving the story. You have to be involved in the work in progress to give it the authenticity, and to, so that you could, you know, you have trust going forward. So it's a fascinating progress as a process as a writer.
Okay, let's continue this part of the conversation, but after a little bit of music.
It's a new day, looking that way, outwards, forwards, onwards, upwards, clear all the fallout, flak and shrapnel. It's done and dusted and I'm on my game. It's a fresh start, got a new heart, I'm homebound, headed for the higher ground. I'm feeling better, I'm back in town. To go, but I'm a
together.
Picking up from where we left off just now, Jenny, if I could just ask you, so as you and were researching this and talking with the various people that Megan had suggested, was there ever any time where you felt emotion would overcome you in you, the playwright?
Yes. Well, that frequently happens, actually, as a writer, but being a writer is a bit like being an actor. There's always a part of you that's outside looking on, and looking at the way you can shape the material and all that kind of thing. So, yes, I find it terribly moving and affecting, and I was in tears or close to tears a lot of the time. But I find that helped rather than prevented me from, you know, preparing the script. I was just saying to Megan earlier this morning that I have learnt so much working on this project because they are very recent stories and very visceral, but also because although I had always understood about PTSD with the military, I really hadn't considered how first responders to emergency situations have affected the firefighters, the police, nurses, paramedics, what they have to deal with. And I feel so proud of them all as a community member, you know, so grateful to them all. I mean, we have some in our family, our own family, and I look at them differently now. Yes. And I was
but
saying
I think we're all closer, aren't we, in a physical sense, to the first responders than we are perhaps to the
yes.
naval pilot. Or
yes,
the,
exactly. Mm-hmm. We see them every day, and still I hadn't realised, well, I suppose I did realise, but I hadn't really appreciated the depth of the, what am I trying to say? I think you were saying before, Megan, the build-up day after day of the things that you see with so often no time to debrief because they are understaffed and under-resourced. Mm. And so that you have to go from one crisis to another with no way really of processing properly what you've seen and those... the fragments of those things that you're seeing kind of build up, apparently, so it seems.
Yes, well,
in your brain.
We get the, I don't mean this to be disparaging of our journalists, but we just get the sensational part
yes.
of these things,
yes.
whereas
yes.
these men and women are dealing with no sensation whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Megan, then, what made you, I mean, I can, with your military background and all that, and your colleagues of the past and so on, I can understand the military thing. Why the first responders? How did that happen?
Sure. So my brother is a firefighter. Mm. He, in fact, is one of the few that joined twice. So he did 15 years of service, then went up to the mines, thought he could earn the big bucks. But 7 years later, he went and joined again. So he was one of the oldest recruits that they've ever had. And at 51, he graduated. So he's a super fit, he's an athlete, incredible individual. And even this morning I rang him and I said, how are you? And, you know, he's been fighting fires the last few days. I mean, he doesn't know when so his shift is, is set time, but that's not real. Like, you know, in terms of if there's a fire, you don't get to go home because your clock says it's 5 o'clock. You stay until the fire's out. And that might mean 5 extra hours. It may mean that you've got to keep going until, you know, someone relieves you. And he's just been sent up to Ellenbrook because there's been a tragic double fatality up there. So he, you know, he's hearing that all the time. They are living that every day. And I know one of his colleagues, we have an event down in Dunsborough. It's coming up in April. Last year we had a group of firefighters, current firefighters, and they said, thank you for putting this weekend on. And I said, what do you mean? They said, we just sometimes don't get away. We talk to each other all the time, but
yes.
we just actually need that space to just debrief, you know, and that's what we're trying to do at Buddy Up, is that we get it. We know that you've seen some pretty bad stuff, and we're a safe space to just get it off your chest, because that may be all they need, just someone to hear
yes.
how it affected them and to validate that emotion.
So, Megan, who are the people who hear, who are listening, and how do you recruit them?
So I guess most of us is it's word of mouth. We do obviously do marketing through Facebook and through LinkedIn and Instagram and all that sort of thing, but a lot of it is word of mouth. So we really hope that someone will come to an event and realise, oh, this is amazing, and tell their friends and family, because we all know someone who has served in either emergency services or our military. And so we know that person that might be struggling a little bit, that might need it, but they don't have to be struggling. You know, this is the point. We are a community that gets you and gets, and because sometimes, and we're talking about this before, sometimes someone might not really appreciate that they might have PTSD, but it'll hit them one day. And so if we can get some of that pain out now, they may never, you know, fall in a heap, you know. And so, I mean, the conversations I've had out on a stand-up paddleboard, or, you know, on a walk, or, you know, just at a coffee, whatever, it's been quite incredible. And, you know, if I feel that this person needs more help, and this is the same for all of our members, we will say, hey, have you thought about talking to someone? You know, so we're like a referral agency as well, you know. So we, but just like you would with a friend group, you know, if you know your friend's in a bit of pain, you go, hey, have you seen the doctor? You know, so it's that sort of... We've got their back,
basically. So am I right in saying that, in a sense, anybody is welcome to come and help Buddy up? But and this is spread from here, where you began the whole thing. How did the spread happen?
So we actually started here and in Hobart when we first started. Ah. Yeah, so we had a veteran down there who was running a basically PT sessions, and I flew down to Hobart, had a chat to him. He was happy to get on board, and then we started up in Brisbane. So we've been national right from the beginning.
That's
pretty
amazing.
Much. Yeah, so I guess once we had the idea, and I knew it was a good model, so this, you know, Team Red, White and Blue that I talked about in America, it's a very lean model. So instead of buying buildings and all this, you know, money and structures and cars and all this, we don't need that. All our events are run outside or, you know, someone else's venue or something like that. So we have very limited staff, paid staff. We have no buildings. We have no cars, you know. So all the money goes back into our members and our events. And the other thing about it is that we don't have ambassadors, or at the moment anyway, but we're grassroots. We say to our members, what do you want? Do you want pottery? Okay, we'll put pottery on. Do you want yoga? Okay, great. Or do you want a hike? Or do you want archery? Whatever. Let's look at what activities you like. And that might be just for your little group of people. That's fine. And so we say to people, if there's a particular event you like doing, maybe you can learn to become an event leader. We'll train you up and get you a first aid certificate and things like that. And then you run the event. And so it's very much a grassroots volunteer run.
Is there some sort of structure of administration?
Oh, absolutely. So we set that up first. So the first 6 months before we became operational was all about compliance. So I basically got two other directors. We got registered as a charity, a company limited by guarantee. Then we got our deductible gift recipient status, all of that. Our website, that took 6 months of, you know, hard work. And then, you know, I know a lot of people take a long time to get their deductible gift recipient status. I do know that. I got legal advice on it, and in fact I was very fortunate that there was a lawyer in... So I failed the first time, basically, and then I was like, right, no, I didn't know that this was a thing. So I got Googled, and there was this legal advice, how to get it, and there was a lawyer in Melbourne who was absolutely amazing. She had a brother who had served, and so she had the soft spot. And it was, yeah, very interesting that the day before I'd actually... Because it was my money that I used to set up the organisation. I put a loan in of $17,000, and as you know, a bit more than that in the end. But it got paid back, and we've since, you know, received DVA grants and Department of Health federally grants. So we've been recognised for what we're doing.
Yes.
But we have a very strong board who three of the members have company directors qualifications, and we've got another two that are getting that. We have very strong compliance structures in place. So that is a big part of who we are. I don't like doing anything half.
And also, of course, too, I would imagine the privacy of the various people that you, inverted commas, help.
Oh, absolutely.
As Theatre 180 respected that.
It's interesting hearing you talk about the setting it up, Megan. The two companies, ours and yours, are very similar, really, in that where we travel lightly and on small funds, but, you know, you can make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, for the future, what do you see for Buddy Up? Or what would you like to see?
I guess I see that there is a lot of... like, we are focused in that early intervention space, and I would like to see that there is more focus in that, that mm-hmm. space rather than...
Can I just interrupt? Does that mean you have to do more, or do we need more publicity for it?
So I think, look, from a government perspective, I know that, say, you know, the other big, Beyond Blue and I think Black Dog, they're actually focusing more on the early intervention. They realise that that's, you know, so I think we, as a community, as a country, we need to think about early intervention. What are we doing at the... because mental health is a massive issue in this country and it's getting worse. And so this is not just service personnel, but obviously I have a special place in my heart for those people because of what they've seen and done. But we have a lot of just general community that are suffering mental health issues. And so what can we do at that prevention stage? I would love to see, you know, us, you know, a bit of mentoring, you know, that we can go into schools and that sort of thing. That's long term. That's, you know, but what I see is that we are going to be in every state of Australia in every community, that we would be a, you know, a household name, that this is something that, oh yeah, just go to your local Buddy Up event and connect in there, and this is what they do.
How do people make contact here if they just want to find out more?
Sure, website is probably the best, so you just Google Buddy Up Australia .org and you'll find us. And we have an app which basically has all our events on it. So what that means is, just like if someone's serving and they get posted, or if you're travelling, you know, so if I'm going to Brisbane, I go, oh, I'm going to be in Brisbane in April. I wonder what they've got on. Oh, I want to go to that, you know, hike or that coffee catch up or whatever it is. And I can just say I'm going. And so it's an immediate family or immediate tribe that you are going to when you go to these different places.
Membership denote a fee of any kind?
Okay, so when we started, it was purely because we had no funding. So, but we've removed that. So basically, if you have served or are serving in our emergency services or our military, you get free membership. If you're an immediate family member of one of those people, you get free membership. If you believe in our cause and you think this is an amazing organisation, but you have no affiliation with those services, you can join up for $49 a year. So it's pretty reasonable. But the thing is, if we have an event, a support, and we call that a supporter, the one that pays, if we have an event that's limited in numbers, a supporter obviously would have to give up their place to someone who is an actual member.
So that, well, we'll have your brochure here at the studio so that people can check with us on 9364988 should they need that. You're not, don't get, sit down. You're not going yet. just do as you're told, please, Megan. Jenny, you mentioned earlier, and it's a point I would like to share with everybody, that Theatre 180 is, well, succinctly, community interested. So with this particular event that I witnessed, which was so emphatic, and your writing was incredible in capturing the essence of things, because I would imagine the actual stories were a lot longer. I don't mean in content, but I do mean in just the verbiage that might have gone along with it.
Yes and no. I mean, there's an amazing amount of people in the community who are great at not only verbalising but writing their own stories. I really, in some instances, I take a lot of dramatic licence, but in this one, no. This one really was people's words. And when I had rewritten something slightly often for kind of reasons of movement of the story or whatever, I changed it when the story giver said, look, I really want it said this way. So so I think actually I didn't have to do a great deal, Tony. I was shaping who said what when, but the words on the page were really as they came to me, which is remarkable. Doesn't often happen.
Madam Davis, you've got to grow your ego just a little bit, because as a witness of that event, and I'll call it that production, it was every bit good theatre.
Well, yes, this is the thing. I mean, it was good theatre because they're very dramatic stories, but and there was all moments of comedy as well that people spoke of, which was lovely. But I think my job always, first and foremost, well, mostly first and foremost, is shaping material and finding the arc of the story where music comes in to augment and all those kind of things. So that's having a long theatre experience, I suppose.
I mean, it was great. It wasn't intrusive, your actor-singer working on it and all that sort of thing. It just, theatricalised.
Yes, and there are moments when you need to stop and reflect.
Yes.
Aren't there moments when you need to have a pause because something
is
happening?
Why do you think we
script?
Have music in this program?
Ah, yes, there you go. Not just so you can go and have a cup of tea or wash up.
Exactly. That too. But look, Buddy Up as an association, Buddy Up Australia and Theatre 180 have done a great job. Is this... I would hate to think that the event that I went to, the production I went to, was just going to be shelved and put away.
Well, you're absolutely right. No one wants that, really, Buddy Up. The story givers don't, and we don't. So we're very involved at the moment with the next show, 21 Hearts, about Vivian Bullwinkle, which opens in a couple of weeks and various things. But after that, we need to sit down and talk about, where this goes from here, really.
Good.
Because you do feel as though it needs a wider community understanding, reception.
Just the PR alone.
Yes. It does, because I know I've learnt such a lot, and other people would too. It's just... We all, as a community, we always need to work on our empathy, our understanding of others, and this is what theatre can do, really. Yes. I mean, this is a large what of the arts does, isn't it, really?
That's why we need to be a lot more conscious as a community the culture of a state is bound up very much in the things that you both do, much more so than what the local restaurants are selling at any particular time. The culture of the state is these two things, Buddy Up Australia and Theatre 180. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
From this day and age, I'm allowed to call you ladies.
Certainly. I still identify as that.
I would just say that our technician, Ido Brands, is shocked that I'm calling you ladies, but I wonder why. Anyway, both Megan and Jenny, thank you for being with The Listening Post, and let me eavesdrop again when you come together to do the next stage of this work.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Roaring, we lived in the darkness. The chopper cuts into the night. Ahead in the distance, the enemy somewhere below. Gun in my hand, bullets flying. Our minds lying under the ground. In the dust and the madness, I'm feeling a long way from home. After the war, will you still know who I am? After the war, will the dream crumble like sand? Will we
After the war, will you still know who I am? After the war, will the dream crumble like sand?
And again, thank you to Megan and to Jenny for being with us tonight on The Listening Post with such an important subject. It really made me think a lot more about our military and, of course, our first responders as well. Now, don't forget, if you want to find out more and if any way you can help with Buddy Up Australia, then we do have all that information here should you want to ring us on 9364 9888. Well, it is almost time for me to move myself out of the way for Ted Zappara's great program, which he is presenting right through from 7 o'clock tonight. A really fine program for you coming, as always, from Ted. And let me see. Also, thank you to Susan for being so kind and caring of your guests and for me. Oh, she's shaking her head. She's quite happy to be good for the guests, but she doesn't want to be particularly good for me. I'm hurt. Very, very, very much hurt. Next week, we'll have another discussion for you. So be with us for The Listening Post next week. And if you're around on Saturday morning, you might like to be with me for Capital Events. And I'd like to thank Alan Downs, OAM, our research officer, working away in the background, and also Nigel Rogers, our historian, military historian, also working in the background there and bringing together this program for you. And it's time now for me to say good night, and God bless to you all, and do indeed have a very happy week. Tuned to